Chapter 2. Once it became clear that Rex and Satine were really dating, Beau sat him down and gave him a set of extremely clear instructions. No secluded meetings, she'd snapped, getting very much in Rex's face. And I don't care if you think they're romantic, I promise she doesn't want you to do that. Keep yourself well above board until she says otherwise, and we won't have a problem. Since there wasn't that much secluded space in Sundari Palace anyways, with Beau and Corki and Ahsoka all over the place, it wasn't a big thing to worry about. But the number of people did create some difficulty in balancing obviously public spaces and actual privacy on a date. One evening, an opportunity presented itself in the form of Ahsoka Tano pulling on a pair of heels as she leaned on Lagos for support. Corki was holding Lagos by her other arm and giving directions into his comlink to their other friends. "Don't do anything I wouldn't do," Rex told them, mostly because he thought it was funny. He was so pleased to see her going out and doing something fun with a group of people her own age that he would happily have approved lots of inadvisable activities. "That's a lot of things," Ahsoka pointed out. "Then don't do anything that Anakin would do. How's that?" She laughed and, with a last goodbye, showed herself out. Rex waited until the last sounds of the youths disappeared down the turbolift before making his way to knock on Satine's office door. "Come in," she called, and looked pleased when Rex revealed himself. "What is it? I'm almost done here for the day." "Corki and Ahsoka have gone out," Rex told her, and was gratified to see that excited expression on Satine's face that mirrored his own. "I was wondering if, while they're gone, you wanted to join me in the living room to watch something." "Actually," Satine said, "let me just finish this speech read through. I have a slight variation on that same idea that I think you might enjoy." When Ahsoka got back, well past midnight, she found Rex and Satine still in the living room, the loading screen of her favorite holoracing sim flashing dimly in front of them as they dozed. She laughed quietly and saw herself to bed. They received the news from Coruscant of the end of the war, drop by drop, and then all at once. From the first news that the war was ending, Ahsoka and Rex both had been chomping at the bit, raring to go home and help in whatever way they could. Satine and Beau persuaded them to wait only because Rex was needed to help clean up yet another Death Watch splinter cell, who were unhappy with the compromise and working with some of Maul's criminal contacts. Once that was cleared up, Satine knew it was only a matter of time before she would have to let both of them go home to celebrate and to help with what came next, for the clones and for the Jedi. When the end came, however, there was no cause for celebration. The news was confused at first, patchy. In the beginning, all they knew was that the Chancellor was dead. And then Satine got the call informing her, as Duchess of Mandalore, that the Chancellor had been a Sith Lord and had orchestrated the war. The Republic, she was told, was in chaos. Faced with a crucial decision, she restricted travel in and out of Mandalorian space until she could discern what, exactly, was going on. Rex and Ahsoka had both been plastered to the news for days, their comms on max volume on the off chance that anyone would call, when Satine came out of her office, looking like she'd stared death in the face, and pressed the mute button. The news anchor's mouth flapped silently behind her. "I just got off a holocall with Senator Organa," she said without preamble. "Rex, there's something you need to know, and we can have this conversation privately or together." Ahsoka shot Rex a somewhat desperate look, and he found that he didn't care about privacy. Nothing that made Satine look like that was something he wanted to hear alone. "What is it?" Satine looked at a chair, didn't sit down, folded her hands in front of her, and then behind her. Rex didn't think he'd ever seen her look this visibly nervous. "Please, Satine." "Everything is going to be fine," she interrupted, the words seemingly as much for her own benefit as for Rex's. The worst thing that could have happened didn't happen, and you're going to be fine. That didn't sound good. It's about Palpatine's files, the things they've uncovered. He was behind the commissioning of the Gar, and he had the Kaminoans implant biochips in your brains. They allowed Palpatine to issue commands that were impossible to refuse. Horrible things. Bail tells me that they think there was an order in them to kill the Jedi. He would have made... Satine cut herself off, looking distinctly nauseous. Ahsoka wrapped an arm fiercely around Rex. "Don't touch me," he hissed urgently. "I'm..." She didn't let go. "He's dead. He can't hurt anyone now, and they're going to shoot his body into a fucking sun if I have anything to say about it. Satine said it's going to be fine, isn't it?" The Duchess sat herself on the calf table right in front of him and put a hand on Rex's knee. "You aren't a danger to us, and Bail is going to have the Jedi healers send the surgical protocol to the palace medical staff for you and the other clones resident on Mandalore. It's already been successful on Coruscant, and we have good doctors here who aren't burnt out by 3 years of war. You're going to be all right." "He made us to destroy you," Rex said, mostly to Ahsoka, who was still holding him tightly, as if he was going to fall apart if she let go. Maybe he was. "He failed," she replied, with a certainty that made her sound like Anakin. Satine, finally regaining her confidence, said, "I'm going to go call the College of Neuroscience and the rest of the clones of Mandalore. Don't punish yourself for something someone did to you." It was the lesson they'd been imparting to Ahsoka for months. "I'll try." She leaned in and kissed him on the cheek before returning to her office to help save the world. "We have to leave," Ahsoka said to her hands. While Rex was in surgery, she'd finally received a call from Coruscant, from Terra Sinube, an ancient Jedi who Satine had never met before, telling her the rest of the story of what was being left unsaid about Palpatine. The very second Sinube had said Anakin's name, Satine had known this was the only outcome. She hardly could have begrudged the fact. Rex and Ahsoka were only here because Anakin had made it so. She had wondered at the fact that they hadn't heard from Anakin or Obi-Wan or Cody the second the war ended. No doubt, this was why. "Wait," Satine advised her, "until they initiate. You don't want to overwhelm them. Call ahead, let them know that you're worried, that you want to help, but don't come until they ask." "What if he doesn't think we'll come?" It was an altogether too likely possibility. "Rex will need time to recover from his surgery. In that time, you can reach out from here. Obi-Wan will make sure Anakin knows you're only waiting on his permission." A few days later, when Rex was up and walking around, Anakin called them and said the word. Rex and Ahsoka, bags already packed, left for Coruscant immediately, with Corky and his diplomatic credentials in tow to ease their passage. With Bo-Katan away in Caldabi, Satine, for the first time in months, found herself alone. Satine had offered for them to use her apartment on Coruscant, but it didn't feel right somehow. To rely on her generosity when they were leaving her. Even if they'd gone for the most important reason, it had still felt, somehow, like the shattering of something sacred. Like an ending. Satine couldn't leave Mandalore. Rex wouldn't leave Coruscant for as long as he was needed here. And so, he and Ahsoka rented an apartment together, first with Rex's salary from his time as Bo's sidekick, and then, later, with their Gar back pay. They'd marked where every single thing in the house went with pieces of colorful tape, and practiced until Ahsoka felt comfortable that she wouldn't lose anything. Even though it was far smaller than their quarters in Sundari, it somehow felt emptier without Satine and Bo and Corky all there. Fortunately, neither Rex nor Ahsoka spent much time in their apartment. "You can hold her, if you want," Anakin said, and offered up the impossibly small person in his arms for inspection. Rex, without any subtlety, folded his arms behind his back so that Anakin couldn't hand her over. "Are you sure those things were ready to be decanted?" Cody, with even less subtlety, stepped hard on his foot. "I held the babies, Rexica. You hold the babies." He had a hard time imagining his Aurovod with one of these in his arms, but as he glanced across the room to where Kenobi was holding the other one and chatting with Ahsoka and Padme, he thought he knew exactly how that had happened. Anakin, at least, had some pity. "Easy, Cody. You've never seen a kid this young, have you?" Rex shook his head. He'd seen babies and infants on Mandalore, of course. One of Bo-Katan's troublemaking contacts on Concordia had been carrying one around, but that child was significantly bigger than either of these. "It's not that hard," Anakin promised him, and then, with no pity at all, he and Cody manhandled Rex until he was holding the child in proper support position. Amazingly, her eyes stayed closed for the whole process. She was heavy, being made of flesh and bone and all the heavy things that people were made of, but she was also impossibly light because of her tiny size. Something ancient and protective in Rex curled tight. Less than a minute, and he already felt about these children the same way he felt about Ahsoka. There was the sound of a holocam clicking, and Rex's focus immediately zeroed in on Ahsoka, trying to stash the evidence up her sleeve. "What?" she asked, all false innocence. "I was just thinking that Bo-Katan is going to want some supporting evidence that you're fit to raise warriors with her sister." General Kenobi barely contained a chesty laugh. "Shut up," Rex told her, gratified by the small smile that had appeared on Anakin's face at their antics. To Anakin, he said, "They're wonderful." He nodded. "They're the most wonderful thing in the galaxy." And then, conspiratorially, "There's some fierce competition in this same room, though." And there was. Rex loved each and every one of them. But he couldn't escape the persistent feeling that something was missing. Satine started with work, first, to keep her mind busy. She had the unusual position of being one of an extremely low number of heads of state to be on good terms with both the Republic and the Separatists, and she used this expertly. A peace conference was scheduled for a month later on Concordia, where she and Bo-Katan hosted nearly 10,000 diplomats. The negotiations had already been taking place on Coruscant and Sereno, but there was something about neutral ground, which Mandalore was, that helped tremendously. Standing on her borrowed balcony, watching the diplomats circle in the garden below, Satine found Bo-Katan at her side in full armor. "It's an extraordinary thing, isn't it?" Satine asked her, though she knew her sister held diplomacy in little esteem. "We were once the bringers of death to the Republic, and now we're the bringers of peace." Bo-Katan was quiet for a long moment, and Satine feared that she'd offended her. When she eventually spoke, it was quiet. "Mandalore shouldn't define ourselves by the Saad Draaten, but if we must have them, better like this, where they recognize us not as equals but as leaders, than anything else." From Bo, that meant a lot, even if she was still sort of missing the point of all of this. "I couldn't have made it here without you." Her gloved hand found Satine's and squeezed tight. "It's not so bad, our legacy. Corky will carry it well, even if he is far too much like you." He'd returned from Coruscant alone and was mingling in the garden as they spoke, Lagos at his side and their other friends not far off. "He has more of you in him than you worry." She still remembered that mess with Prime Minister Almec. Bo said nothing, but she squeezed Satine's hand again. It was weeks before Rex was allowed to see any flash of weakness from Anakin. His general had never been good at that kind of thing, at asking for help. He was so bad at it, in fact, that the universe had shifted to give him no choice but to receive it. He seemed to be easier with Obi-Wan than he had been before, and Rex watched him be dragged into bearing his soul to General Voss. But although it was plain that he was glad to have Rex there, it took time to move past the careful boundaries where their relationship had once drawn its lines. The moment came one evening, late, when Padme had been drawn into an extended Senate session after the return of the Concordia delegation. With Ahsoka and Obi-Wan out having bonding time, Anakin and Rex stayed together on twin duty. Once Luke and Leia were both asleep, they retreated to the living room with the baby monitor clutched tightly in Anakin's hand. Given the feeling of both twins in the Force, it was more a device to soothe Anakin's anxiety than anything. They spoke, in hushed tones, about the Concordia Accords, about Luke and Leia's developmental milestones, about the novella Rex's soulmate had been partway through reading before it ended up in his hands. For once, it wasn't terrible, and he'd actually quite enjoyed it. The note in it, which simply read, "The war is over, and we are alive," had also been pleasing. Eventually, though, the topic turned back to memories of battles won and lost. And that was when, as something of a shock to Rex, Anakin chose to bare his soul. "The war was for nothing, wasn't it?" Anakin whispered, tone not at all matching the harshness of his words. "We fought for nothing." In some ways, they had. Satine had done more to save the Republic sitting in her office than either of them had in years on the battlefield. And yet, even as Satine had shown him about the value of peace, Bo had reminded him that there was goodness in a just fight, even if you didn't win. "The things we fought for didn't exist," Rex told him, "and I didn't choose to fight for it. Maybe I never would have chosen it, given the choice. I don't know. But it wasn't nothing. My Vare didn't die for nothing. They died trying to do the best for each other, for what they believed in, for the future we're going to make that will be worthy of them. I have to believe that." "I can't believe that any future could be worthy of that." Rex pried the baby monitor from Anakin's fingers and pressed the button that brought up a live holofeed of the twins in their cribs. "Are you sure you don't see any piece of the future that's worthy of it? Because I do, here and on Mandalore." "Do you wish you were there instead?" Anakin asked him, with uncharacteristic perceptiveness. "You seem like you had something special there." "I miss her," Rex admitted. "We call, sometimes, but it isn't the same. That doesn't mean that there's anywhere else in the galaxy I would rather be than here." Anakin seemed to be drowning. "How can you possibly say that?" Rex loved Satine. He loved her, and he cared for Corky, and he loved Bo-Katan in spite of herself. But this... "You're my family, Anakin. You know that I never wanted to leave you, don't you?" Had he ever said as much? With a sinking feeling, Rex realized that he probably hadn't. "Even if you don't know, it's true. You were part of my family long before your weird middle-of-the-night adoption ritual. Everyone in the 501st would say the same." There was a silence, long but not especially awkward, before Anakin said, "Thank you." Rex reached up and ruffled his hair before things got too weird. In between the hectic conference organizing and hosting, Satine had begun to deal with the matter of clone citizenship. First came her stack of clones with Mandalorian soulmates, all of whom were granted citizenship under a single decree, issued the second the war ended. The second matter was Cody, personally. True to her threat, Satine conveyed upon him Obi-Wan's honorary citizenship. When they inevitably got married, Obi-Wan would finally have to accept that he was, in fact, extremely Mando Carla. Then there were several million other people to deal with, and that was the trouble. Mandalore was a planet that just barely sustained itself through imports and had almost no agricultural capacity. It couldn't sustain another 6 million people, unless... The plan was, largely, Bo-Katan's, though Satine knew that she herself would receive both the credit and the blame. Mandalore had once been more self-sufficient before the significant destruction of infrastructure in the Civil War, and in many ways, they'd never really recovered. Bo-Katan's plan was simple, clever, and effective. It was a blueprint for a new domed city, as yet unnamed, with hydroponics capacity triple that of Sundari. The clones had more than the manpower to construct such an endeavor, and minerals were the one area where Mandalore was not at all lacking. The plan was good, but Satine's twist on it was even better. She leaked it to the Galactic Press and watched the ensuing uproar as worlds realized that Mandalore alone might absorb the entire Gar. The reputation of Mandalorians was fearsome already, and the idea of them with a standing army of millions terrified people. Bids to open up other settlements began almost immediately, and things grew fiercely competitive until Bail Organa, peacemaker that he was, stepped in and proposed the matter being settled with the allocation of an uninhabited world where clones could govern themselves and be represented by one of their own in the Senate. It was a proposal people never would have accepted without the looming specter of Mandalore making them afraid, but with that in mind, an independent clone homeworld was approved, pending identification of an appropriate location. Satine counted this as a victory. One last development, as related to the clones, came just after the signing of the Concordia Accords. Most of the delegations had already returned home, but a few stragglers remained. One such was one of the senior members of the Serenian delegation, Lady Gwenia of Talarma, a sharp-featured woman perhaps a decade older than Satine, though it was hard to know with Serenians. She had, Satine gathered, been under house arrest for nearly the entirety of the war. One morning, they were the first two of the last 100 or so delegates to arrive at breakfast. Lady Gwenia, unaccompanied by her staff, approached Satine. She bowed formally, looking entirely too awake for this time of morning. Lady Gwenia. Duchess Kreese. Lady Gwenia reached into her bag and withdrew something Satine recognized instantly as a book on courtly forms from the Ducal Library of Sundali Palace. It had the crest of Clan Kreese embossed on the cover. I believe this is yours. It was like receiving a gift from the past. Decades earlier, it had been a very similar book that had brought her to Tai. Satine's breath caught in her throat. I'm sorry, Lady Gwenia. I think there's been a mistake. I don't have a living soulmate. Gwenia furrowed her brow in confusion for a second before her lip curled in amusement. Neither do I. Unfortunately, the Countess did not clear our delegation to bring our spouses. This book was found by my lady wife. Her fears had been unfounded, Satine realized. This was nothing but a coincidence. Jalia. The Serenian's expression brightened considerably. Yes. Her soulmate is a friend of mine. Gwenia gave her a knowing look. I wouldn't reveal his identity without consent. Naturally, but you might give him this. She passed the book to Satine, who balanced it along with her cup of calf. And perhaps put him in contact with my office. I'll direct my secretaries to take any calls from Sundari as a priority. Good, except that Rex wasn't in Sundari and possibly never would be again. I'll let him know. Lady Gwenia bowed again and was gone. That evening, she steeled herself and called Rex to tell him the news. For the first time since he'd left Mandalore, the conversation felt natural, as if the distance between them barely mattered. He looked even happier to see her than he did to hear the news about his soulmate. It took Rex a few days to work up the nerve to place a call to the Lady of Talarma. In that time, he found a misplaced rain jacket and a hair tie that certainly didn't belong to either him or Ahsoka. He'd considered the theoretical idea of Jalia for so long that meeting her, finally, seemed almost a bridge too far. But Rex wasn't a coward, and so he gritted his teeth and made the call on an afternoon where the time in Talarma and Senate District Coruscant was nearly perfectly aligned. He used Satine's diplomatic codes to do it, an offer she'd readily made to cut through some of the red tape that still divided the formerly separatist worlds from the rest of the Republic.
"Secretary Orla speaking,"
said the young, dark-skinned woman who answered the call.
"You've reached the office of Lady Gwenya of Talarma."
Rex offered her his best polite nod. Rex of Mandalore, formerly of the Gar. He liked appending Mandalore to his name. For his oddly gotten citizenship, of course, and for the home he'd made there. She furrowed her brow for a moment, and then, seeming to understand, she spun her chair around.
"Call from Mandalore, lady. Directing it to you now."
The call turned to an empty haze of blue light for a moment, before refocusing to reveal a sharp-faced woman with brown hair, just beginning to gray, wearing a business suit. When she saw Rex's face, expression lit up with comprehension and recognition. She knew, of course, who and what he was. "Lady Gwenya," she said, although she must have known that Rex was already well aware of her identity. "Rex of Mandalore," he repeated, and then, because he'd read enough terrible Serenian romance novels to know that they were all obsessed with titles, no title at the moment. It didn't feel quite right using the moniker of Captain anymore. Gwenya was watching him, an almost examining look.
"We'd wondered why you seemed to have so few things to lose. I take it your service was the cause."
He'd hoped that, by Satine's description of her as the closest thing to a dissident permitted on Dooku's Sereno, she might not have been so partisan. "I did the right thing." She was examining him, looking for something.
"Maybe, but I can hardly say they did right by you. Did you escape?"
"Oh, huh. My general helped me leave so that I could be a support for my little sister. They're good people, even if the Kaminoans and the Chancellor weren't." Whatever she'd been looking for, Gwenya seemed to have found it. She sat back, regally, and offered him a slight smile.
"I'm glad to hear that. We were worried for you."
There was a click as she detached the holo-emitter from the desk and stood, beginning to walk.
"Come then. You picked a good time to call. It's a school holiday on Sereno, so Jalia doesn't have work."
As they walked through what Rex swiftly gathered was some sort of palace that housed both offices and living quarters, much like he'd experienced in Sundari, Gwenya and Rex spoke about themselves. She asked few questions about the structure of the Gar or individual campaigns. She was more interested in Ahsoka, who she'd at first assumed was another clone, and then, when she realized that Rex also referred to his Vare as siblings, asked about them. From her, Rex learned that both she and Jalia had been under some degree of direct surveillance or house arrest for the last 5 years.
"Dooku didn't feel bothered enough to kill us,"
Gwenya told him, rather blasé about the whole affair.
"Talarma's a small house, but an old one, and killing us would have made the council antsy. I could have pushed him to do more to us, but I pulled back after he sent that henchwoman of his to menace Jalia."
He'd always thought that, being on the Separatist side of the war, his soulmate would have been relatively safe from the sort of things that haunted Rex. "Is she okay?" Gwenya nodded.
"We're all right. It wasn't a good situation, exactly, but we had each other. And now he's dead, and we're alive, so I guess we made the right decision."
Rex felt much the same way about Palpatine.
"Ah,"
Gwenya said.
"We're here."
Rex watched her reach out and open a door with a few taps to a keypad before she called,
"Jay, I have your soulmate on the line."
A second later, another middle-aged human woman appeared, pressing herself against Gwenya's shoulder to ensure that she was in frame. She had a round face, thick glasses, and a bushel of dark hair. Her expression was one of complete enthusiasm and hope.
"Hi,"
she said, raising a hand in greeting.
"Is it cheesy to say I've been waiting my whole life to meet you?" "Definitely,"
Gwenya advised.
"Too bad,"
Jalia said.
"I'm saying it anyways."
Rex thought that, even if they would never be his family the way Cody, Ahsoka, Anakin, and Satine were, he could be happy with this. Satine set foot on Coruscant for the first time since her little revolution in the dead of night. It had been more than 4 months since she'd bid goodbye to Ahsoka and Rex. She'd been called to speak before the Senate on the Gar, where she would assert that the clones should have been citizens of Mandalore and the Republic from the beginning, and were only not because the Senate had hoped to profit from their enslavement. In spite of the late hour, Obi-Wan was there to greet her. He looked as happy and healthy as Satine had ever seen him, wearing his robes without any armor. When she got off her ship, he hugged her, which was more affection than he'd ever shown openly to her before. "How are you?" she asked him, when they disentangled from each other. He was smiling before he even started speaking. "Oh, you know, there's never really a dull moment. Leia's discovered the power of meaningless babble. She's going to become a fast talker just like her mother. Luke's a little more patient, where it counts. You'd be surprised by how much personality they have for babies." Obi-Wan, Satine realized over the course of their walk to her apartments, had spent the last 4 months in a fierce competition against the entirety of the Gar, a significant percentage of the Jedi Order, and a large number of senators and their aides for the title of most doting uncle. The Skywalker Amidala children were going to be the most spoiled people in the galaxy. Talking about them, and then about Cody, Anakin, and the rest of the family, was the most enthused she'd ever seen Obi-Wan. There was none of his usual curated charm here, just genuine excitement and happiness. It was lovely. It was also, Satine realized with a certain jealousy, the sort of feeling she'd had just a few months earlier. She couldn't begrudge Obi-Wan his joy, and she was more than all right with Bo and Quirky, but she missed the pieces of the puzzle that could never be put back together in the same way. Her dark apartment on Coruscant, unoccupied for months, was even lonelier than Sundari, without her sister and nephew there. She was already dreading sleeping there as she unlocked the door, before Obi-Wan reached up and put a hand on hers. "There's a surprise party of three waiting for you in there." Of course they were. Why had Satine ever doubted them? "Are you ruining the surprise?" "We thought you'd appreciate the greeting, but less so an actual scare." They all knew her. "I love you, you know." He didn't say it back, but he did blush and smile amusingly demurely before letting her actually open the door. "Surprise!" In spite of the warning, Satine probably would have tripped back over her own skirt if Obi-Wan hadn't caught her reflexively. There were Rex and Ahsoka, sitting in her darkened apartment. Ahsoka jumped up immediately to tackle Satine in a flying hug that nearly sent her tumbling into Obi-Wan again. Rex waited for Ahsoka to release Satine and, extending a hand, let her choose to come to him. When she did, and they stood just across from each other, Obi-Wan and Ahsoka and all the galaxy seemed to fall away. "It's been a while," she said, rather pointlessly. Rex nodded. "It has. Can you forgive me for that?" Satine had chosen her duty over love so many times. She would have chosen Bo and Quirky over any chance at romantic happiness, even with Rex. "Of course. But we're not soulmates, Rex. The universe won't conspire to make sure we don't forget about each other, to make us call. We're going to have to work a little harder than that." He smiled. "I think that's doable. But I'm not sure you're right about the universe. Isn't it interesting that, of all the people on every world, it conspired to give me a person who wanted to be with someone else, just like I wanted someone else? It gave me someone who knows exactly what it's like to fall madly in love with a regal, duty-bound noblewoman. Someone who gave me nothing but books about the subject for years, as if I was destined for the exact thing." "Rex." He gave her a slight grin. "Only joking, Sharae. But you will admit, the universe has aligned to bring you and I together. The rest of the work from that point is ours." Satine knew that she had a stupid smile on her face. "I think we can manage it." She kissed him, and they both ignored Ahsoka's wolf whistling. The end.